Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
...97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Christian Toto is going to join me a little bit later this hour. I've known Christian for a long time. He is a bit of a political pundit, but also reviews films, and he does it from a conservative lens. But we're not going to talk to him necessarily about movies. We're going to talk about RFK Jr. withdrawing because there's been some Hollywood implications of that. So we'll get to that. But I do want to find out, you know, he's seen that Reagan movie, which didn't do very well at the box office. But Sue, you know, we talked about it on Friday.
But the people loved it.
Right. I mean, the critics didn't like it, and it hasn't been marketed very much at all. And if it has been, it's been on outlets that I really don't watch. But we'll have his take on that. Plus, we have an audio cut of the day. The big story, of course, from the weekend, the sad and tragic story from Israel is a lot of these families who had hoped that their loved ones kidnapped on October 7th by Hamas were still going to maybe potentially be released or alive. But on Sunday, we found out from the Israeli army that it had recovered the bodies of two women and four men who had been abducted by Hamas on that fateful day. And now we know that there's a final resolution, unfortunately, there. Former U.S. Senator, almost demoted you there, Jim Talent, is with me this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk, one of the best out there in the country on foreign policy. Senator, how are you this afternoon?
I'm fine, Mark, and the state senators would not have called that a demotion, I guarantee you.
I'm sure they would. They think very highly of themselves. I had one of them on the show on Friday. Anyway, let's kind of segue into what happened over the weekend, because obviously this wouldn't be that shocking since we were wondering if any of these hostages or some of these hostages would still be alive. But what were the circumstances here that we found these hostages' bodies?
Well, Israel is clearing out tunnels in Rafah. Yeah, I don't believe they have been able to rescue any hostages who were not above ground. So they're keeping them in the tunnels, and evidently Hamas knew or figured that they were coming after that tunnel, and in order to deny them the hostages, they executed them. And then I understand released videos of it, too. Nice people.
Yeah. Right? And so, in other words, the final moments that Oren Danino, 25, Carmel Gott, who's 40, Hirsch Goldberg, Poland, who's 23, Alexander Lobanov, who's 32, Eden Yura Shamli, 24, they were standing, in theory, they were all standing next to one another and then shot in the head by these terrorists.
Yes. Exactly. They are exactly what they appear to be. As a matter of fact, they're proud of it. I could go on, but I'm not going to hijack the interview. Hamas wants, forget about the Israeli hostages. They want Palestinian casualties. They've been disappointed at the level of casualties because they were counting on a lot of them in order to be able to pressure Israel internationally because they can't win any other way. And their only bargaining chip left now is the hostages. So they're not going to allow any of them to be released, even if they have to execute them. It's just, it's hard for us to understand people who can be that barbaric, but that's who they are.
Yeah, and this is all, you know, if you look at today, in particular, Columbia University or some of these other elite universities that we saw completely go out of control in the spring, this is all being framed now on these college campuses, again, as some sort of, black eye for the U.S., that these protesters, I guess they completely ignore what Hamas has done to the hostages, what they've done to the Palestinian people, and they continue to call for the U.S. to get out of this situation. But I'm stunned, even in the wake of more violence and more horrible violence on the part of Hamas, that there's still protesters out there saying, yeah, we want their side, Senator.
Yeah, it's a complete inversion of moral value. Israel is defending herself and her people, which is, of course, the natural and proper response of any sovereign state. They're being attacked on two fronts. or they were. One of them was from Gaza, and the other, they're continually attacked from the north, from Hezbollah. And the only way you can attack Israel, if you have any familiarity at all with the region and what's happened, is basically because you don't think the Israeli state has the right to exist. Now, there are, Mark, there are issues, second, third, fourth level issues with how Israel's managed settlements, how they've managed the West Bank. Okay, but there's the issue here is the first order question, which is, does Israel have the right to exist as a Jewish state? And its enemies think it doesn't, and they're trying to destroy them, which would mean, I mean, incalculable misery. And they know they can't do it using typical military tactics. They tried that for many years, and so they're using terrorism to try and undermine Israeli support around the world. And it's just, it's incredible that so many people in the world are taking the side of these terrorists, including on college campuses.
Well, and let's talk about, because this is, we're going to get into the weeds here, but this is where I depend on you to explain some of this. So you have the Defense Secretary of Great Britain, John Healey, who has moved to suspend 30 of the 250 arms export licenses, where they say there is clear risk that the arms may be used in, quote, serious violation of international humanitarian law in Gaza. So apparently Hamas is sort of winning on that front. Then you got Netanyahu with Biden.
What has changed in the last 5 days?
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What has changed? One thing. These murderers executed six of our hostages. They shot them in the back of the head. That's what's changed. And now after this, we're asked to show seriousness? We're asked to make concessions? What message does this send Hamas?
Well, I think that's a great question. Here's the president.
What makes you think that this deal will be successful in a way that the other deals were not?
Yeah, he's talking about a ceasefire deal. So explain some of those complications, especially with what happened with the UK in particular there, Senator.
Well, the UK, the current government of the UK is cross-pressured within their own coalition by exactly the kind of people you were just talking about, who believe that Israel is in the wrong and that they are the colonial state here or the oppressors or something like that. And so their support for Israel, they're going to trim their sails, if you will, in terms of supporting Israel. I think it was David Lammy, the foreign minister, who made that decision, but it's probably executed by the defense minister, so you're probably right. And unfortunately, the Democrats here are in the same position, which is why I think why Biden started off the first 6 or 8 weeks with a policy that I thought on the whole was pretty good. Now, the one thing Israel needed from the United States was support in the international community for its narrative and for its right to defend itself. And as I said, I think we did that pretty well for a couple of months. But beginning earlier in this year, we have waffled. We have cross-pressured Israel. And it has resulted in prolonging the war, because the whole strategy Hamas has is to win by turning so much of the world against Israel that Israel has to quit or has to quit short of achieving its objective, which is the destruction of Hamas as an operational force. And so they've been encouraged to hold on and encouraged to hold the hostages. In this case, they've rejected. I lost count at about 8 ceasefire proposals that Hamas had rejected. The latest one, the problem is their demand that Israel withdraw from the Philadelphia corridor, which Israel won't do. That's the border between Egypt and Gaza, through which Hamas has received a great deal of its supplies, money, equipment, et cetera. And so Israel's not leaving the Philadelphia corridor, because if they do, Hamas will build itself up again and attack again. And they're not going to let that happen.
So here we are on the, what is it, September 3rd. And Sue and I have lamented the fact that the summer is blown by. Here we are. It's already September. October 7th, this anniversary is going to be here, I guess, is my point, before we know it. I was going to ask you another question. I still mind about what's going on in Ukraine. And that's going, you know, for almost 3 years now. So are we in a situation where this whole situation in Israel is going to have some sort of resolution, or is it just going to drag on and on and on and on?
Well, I think Gaza will have a resolution. I think Israel's already accomplished most of its objective. I mean, Hamas has been broken as a fighting force. The issue now is how Israel can manage things going forward so that Hamas is not able to reconstitute itself, given that there is nobody willing and able to govern in Gaza and continue suppressing Hamas. I mean, that's the problem. The Israelis don't want to do it, and the world wouldn't accept Israel doing it. So Israel is in a position now where they're going to have to decide how they're going to continue to stay involved enough in Gaza to make certain that this doesn't happen again. I think they're going to set up a DMZ between Gaza and Israel. I mean, much bigger than the security perimeter they had. And I think they're going to reserve the right to go in when they want to go in to control the corridor that I just mentioned, and then to go in when they need to go in to suppress Hamas. And they're going to say, look, if anybody would like to take this off our shoulders, to go in and actually run this place and continue suppressing Hamas,
you're welcome to it, right?
Yeah, knock yourself out. But we're not going to accept some sham thing. We're not going to accept UNRWA, you know, the UN agency through which a lot of money was funneled to Hamas. It has to be somebody legitimate. It could be, I guess, the PLO backed up by the Arab states. We don't want to do it, and I don't, you know, I certainly don't blame. I don't want us to do it. So it's a problem, but I think they've achieved their military objective largely. Now the issue is they're going to have to turn north, because Hezbollah has been shelling them from southern Lebanon, and they have 80 to 100,000 people out of their homes, and they can't tolerate that either. So that's the next front of the war I expect to be opening up. I mean, look, Mark, we have the biggest war in the Middle East since 1973, the biggest war in Eastern Europe since World War II. I mean, is there reason to believe that our foreign policy has been failing?
Yeah, I think there's good reason to believe that for sure. By the way, just a side note on the situation in Gaza that I found interesting. So I don't know if you heard about this. They have a polio outbreak in the Gaza Strip, and they have now vaccinated 160,000 children in the last couple of days, and they're trying to get to another 600,000 because I guess this is, you know, for the first time in 25 years, they got a polio outbreak, which is complicating things even more, which is strange.
Yeah, and Israel is going to tremendous steps to permit that to happen. I mean, this military operation of theirs, you have to say, was absolutely brilliant. The way the IDF was able to do this, minimize civilian casualties and minimize its own casualties. You know, I never thought I would say that I thought there was a fighting force as good as the United States Army, but you really got to handle it.
Wow.
Hand it to the IDF.
I mean, that's a high compliment for sure.
That's exactly right.
All right. Can you, just in a couple of minutes, because I'm running a little short on time here, just give us an update. I had General Kellogg on a couple of weeks ago talking about Ukraine. This is another one of those situations where it is, at least for some of us, rather difficult to gauge exactly where this is all heading and if there's going to be some sort of compromise in the end. And, you know, Zelensky decides, all right, Russia gets this and we're going to move on and try to rebuild Ukraine.
Yeah, I've said for a year and a half that I didn't think it was in America's interest to continue financing indefinitely a stalemated battlefield. I don't think it's in Ukraine's interest either. It's in Ukraine's interest to get an acceptable peace so the money can then be spent to rebuild the country, which, by the way, the Europeans really ought to pay for, since it's their failures that caused this mostly. The problem is getting Putin to the table. And so the way to get him to the table is to inflict battlefield defeat on him. In other words, if he thinks if he's losing ground, then he'll probably come to the table.
Right.
That's why it's such a mistake for us to constrain the Ukrainians in the use of the weapons that we're giving them. We ought to allow them, and they're doing it now, to attack Russian territory directly. That's very embarrassing for Putin and potentially very dangerous for him. It's the kind of thing that might get him to the table. but we've consistently hobbled them as well, which never made any sense. Supposedly Biden was afraid of escalation. I never thought that was a problem. I mean, what is Putin going to do conventionally that he isn't already trying to do to Ukraine? He's not attacking other countries. He's not taking on NATO. The war would be over in a week if he gives NATO a provocation to get involved. And he's not going nuclear. I mean, he is afraid to do a full mobilization because he's afraid of dissent among Russia. He's getting forces mostly from the rural areas, from prisons. And you know, they have been gaining territory in the Donbas. But we need to let the Ukrainians and help them insofar as we can achieve some battlefield success and then get to the table. I mean, that's what I think we need to do. That's the way out of this.
Senator Talent, always great to have you on. I hope all is well. We really appreciate it. Our best to your wife, Brenda Talent, as well. We'll talk to both of you soon.
I will pass it along.
All right, take care, Jim. Thank you very much. 522, 97.1 FM Talk. Christian Toto coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Christian is a Hollywood film critic, but he also weighs in on politics and had some interesting things in the aftermath of the RFK suspension of his campaign. Cheryl Hines, his wife, a Hollywood elitist, if you will, and there's been some pushback because of RFK, so we'll break that down. He's got some other thoughts on the presidential race. One story that I wanted to get to, I'm going to try to get this guy that wrote this piece, Jacob Lane, on the air maybe tomorrow or Thursday as the week goes by very quickly. But this is in the Wall Street Journal opinion from 2 days ago, so I guess it was Sunday. And this is one of those things that I think a lot of us predicted would happen, Sue. In the aftermath of the pandemic, we had the pandemic, you know, relief fund that was sent out to all these cities and communities across the country. How did they spend their money, right? Yeah. And we're still waiting on some of that to happen here in St. Louis, right? Even with the Rams settlement. Where the hell is this money and how is it being spent? Well, I have an answer for you if you are familiar with Danville, Illinois. Danville is east of Champaign. And this guy that wrote about this morning in the Journal is named Jacob Lane, who I think used to be in county government there. He's a Republican strategist right now. Danville has 28,000 people. The $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, remember that?
Yeah.
It allocated $350 billion for emergency funding to state, local, and tribal governments. That was a pool of money that has bankrolled a lot of different projects. You want to know what they did in Danville, Illinois with it?
Oh, no.
They built the Danville Aquatic Center, which that's okay. Going to be great for the people of Danville, right? It's a pool, and they probably have some lap swimming like you enjoy to do, right? $13 million Ooh. Bought you a splashy venture in Danville, Illinois. Now, that's not what that money is supposed to go for, right? And this is something that's been very common. And we'll never have, some of us at the time, and it wasn't too tough, I'm not claiming a big victory here, said, look, one of the stories in the aftermath of this particular piece of legislation is going to be the widespread abuse. We'll never probably have a handle on how deep it runs, but just check this out. And by the way, I'm talking about the stuff that's legal right now. Keep in mind, this is all allowed under the rescue plan. So it's not like they're breaking the law. They're just doing things that they shouldn't be doing with the money. There's also stuff that would happen. We've already had stories of people who have been, you know, prosecuted by U.S. attorneys that have run scams, even here in the St. Louis area. So in New Jersey, Phil Murphy, who's the governor there, spent $15 million from the American Rescue Plan to attract soccer's 26th World Cup to the state. Maine used $20 million to modernize fish hatcheries. North Carolina dedicated $5 million for the development of moonshine walking trails. Arizona spent $7 million to boost horse racing in the aftermath of the pandemic. New York paid $2 million to plant 3,600 trees. Broward County, Florida, they doled out more than $140 million to build a 29-story luxury hotel. Now, here's the other thing that's crazy. That's all nuts. That's absurd, what he's highlighting in this piece. But there is $2 billion of American Rescue Plan funds that were earmarked for governments that don't even exist in Connecticut and Rhode Island. Yeah, they allocated money to places that don't even exist, and not a single member of Congress did the research to verify whether the county governments existed. I would say their staff kind of failed them on that as well. That is stunning. Billions and billions Yikes. And billions of dollars just wasted. Now, some of these things will be fine for taxpayers to enjoy for years. It's not what they're for. Yeah.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.